From the studios of Boise State Public Radio News, I'm Gemma Gaudette. This is Idaho Matters. This Wednesday, the U.S. Supreme Court will take up an Idaho case that could have widespread implications around the country. It involves an Idaho abortion law and a lawsuit filed by the Biden administration, which argued that hospitals that receive Medicare funds are required by federal law to provide emergency care, which could potentially include abortion, no matter if there is a state law banning abortion. So here to break down the law and the arguments coming up in the Supreme Court is McKay Cunningham. He is the director of on-campus experiential learning at the College of Idaho and a constitutional lawyer as well. McKay, it's always good to have you on the program.
Hi, Gemma. Great to be here.
So McKay, let's go back to 2020 when this Idaho law went into effect. The Biden administration then stepped in with a federal law. Can you talk about that law, but maybe first explain what EMTALA is?
Yeah, EMTALA stands for Emergency Medical Treatment and Labor Act. And importantly, EMTALA was enacted by federal Congress more than three decades ago, way back in 1986. And it generally provides that any medical facility that one, offers emergency services, and two, accepts federal funding through Medicare, they must treat all patients. And so in other words, if a patient walks into an emergency room at a hospital, they cannot turn that patient down just because the patient cannot pay or they are underinsured. So that's that's kind of a very broad overview of EMTALA. And the question before the U.S. Supreme Court right now is whether EMTALA openly and directly conflicts with a portion of Idaho's abortion law.
Okay, so let's talk about that portion of the Idaho law, which is really the heart of this argument.
Yeah, that Idaho's abortion law has been called a near total abortion ban. It has a very few and very limited and narrow exceptions in which it is not illegal, it is not a crime to provide an abortion. And one of those very narrow exceptions is if the abortion is provided just to save the life of the patient, the life of the woman. And that's it's a pretty narrow exception. A lot of physicians across the state are understandably upset by that because they cannot provide stabilizing care when it is very clear that the woman needs that stabilizing care under Idaho's statute. But then there's EMTALA. And EMTALA, as we just discussed, it requires all hospitals that do take Medicare to provide necessary stabilizing treatment. That's the term of art in the law, quote, necessary stabilizing treatment. So the U.S. Supreme Court is trying to determine if there's a conflict there between EMTALA, which requires necessary stabilizing treatment, and in some instances, that means an abortion care in order to stabilize the health of the woman. Does that law, EMTALA, conflict with Idaho's abortion ban, which says, no, you can never provide an abortion unless it is clear that the woman will die unless she gets an abortion?
So, McKay, Idaho and the Biden administration have been fighting this out in court for a couple of years now. Can you kind of take us through a little of what has happened? Because this case made it all the way to the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals.
Yeah, the timeline behind this case is really pretty fascinating. I don't know how much detail you want to get into it, but you know that Idaho's abortion ban was a trigger law. It was enacted in 2020, and it was a trigger law suggesting that it will not actually become effective. Even though it was enacted in 2020, it will not become effective until Roe versus Wade is ever overturned. And so the Dobbs opinion, which did overturn Roe versus Wade, did not occur until June of 2022. And so our Idaho abortion ban was supposed to go into effect really about a month afterwards. So very soon after Dobbs came down, the Biden administration and the DOJ, Department of Justice, created or published guidance, which pretty much said, look, necessary stabilizing treatment under EMTALA requires abortion care in some instances. And then they used that guidance to file a lawsuit in federal district court in Boise with Judge Windmill. And so Judge Windmill was one of the first judges to try to determine whether or not there really was a conflict between Idaho's abortion statute and this federal law, EMTALA. And one day before Idaho's abortion ban was set to go into effect on August 25th, Judge Windmill hit a timeout and paused the effectiveness of a portion of that abortion ban to give the court some time to determine if there really was a conflict.
Mm-hmm. So McKay,
I'm sorry, go ahead.
Oh, no. Well, I was going to say, so some folks have said that nothing in the original EMTALA talks about abortion. First off, is that true?
Yes, that is true. If you are asking the question, is the term abortion or any of the kind of medical procedures that surround abortion, are they specifically listed in this federal statute? They are not. I mean, it is worth noting that the title of the statute has the word labor in it, and some of the text of the statute has the word labor in it, but there's nothing specifically in EMTALA that requires abortion care in order to stabilize mm-hmm. the health of a woman.
So in your opinion, could that impact the case in front of the U.S. Supreme Court?
Oh, you bet. And that's definitely a big part of the argument that's being brought by Idaho's attorney general, as well as the legislature, who I think is a party to this case. They're arguing that, look, EMTALA has nothing to do with abortion. You can't even find the word abortion in this federal statute. EMTALA instead is really just about patient dumping. Federal Congress back in 1986 created this law so that hospitals couldn't turn away people who needed emergency care just because they couldn't pay for it. So the Idaho legislature is arguing, look, EMTALA is not about abortion. EMTALA is about making sure that every patient gets some emergency care from hospitals that take federal money, and that's it.
Okay, but with that said, you mentioned when you were explaining EMTALA, there was this terminology of stabilizing care. And many would argue that, of course, there is a difference between stabilizing care, right, for the health of someone versus they're about to die, so let's perform an abortion. Well, at that point, the stabilizing care may not even be available because the person is so close to death. So I am assuming that we're going to hear about the stabilizing care in these arguments on Wednesday as well.
You're exactly right. And the briefing submitted on behalf of the Department of Justice makes just those arguments that, yes, EMTALA does not specifically say abortion, but EMTALA does say you have to provide necessary stabilizing care. And it is the standard practice across the nation that in certain instances, stabilizing care means abortion care. And there's also a lot of evidence from five amicus briefs brought by national medical associations that show just what you said, that delaying. So let's just say a woman walks into an emergency room here in Idaho, and it's clear to the physicians in the emergency room that she needs abortion care to stabilize her health. Well, now they delay. They do not move to stabilize that patient mm-hmm. because they don't want to be thrown into jail for a minimum of 2 years. And that delay itself, this is the argument made by the Department of Justice, that delay itself is violative of EMTALA, which requires stabilizing care. So you can see both sides of the argument, the DOJ's argument, as well as the state of Idaho's argument in contrast pretty nicely there.
Mm-hmm. And we do want you to know that we did reach out to the Idaho Attorney General's office numerous times to join us on the show today. However, we have not heard back from them. McKay, is this the first time the Supreme Court has taken up a state law banning abortion since it overturned Roe v. Wade and the Dobbs decision?
Yes, this is a really big case, Gemma. And it's the first time the court has revisited abortion since its landmark decision in Dobbs.
So do you know why they decided to weigh in on this particular law?
I don't. I have no idea why they did so. I mean, I've got some guesses I could posit, mm-hmm. And one of which is that this is in line with their Dobbs decision in that their Dobbs decision was a lot about states' rights. It was about, hey, look, abortion decisions are very, very weighty and profound decisions. They should not be made by an unelected, unaccountable Supreme Court. They should be made by the political process, the voting, the people in each of the states. That's where this decision should be made. And so that allowed, of course, all 50 states to determine what their individual abortion approaches would be. And so that may be the reason why the court took this case, because that same issue is in front of the court. In other words, does Idaho have the power to determine what its exceptions are to its own abortion bans, or is the federal government going to reach its long hand into Idaho and start dictating what abortion procedures should and should not look like in state governance?
But what's interesting about this, though, right, and what muddies it, is the fact that we're talking about federal funding, though, Medicaid, Medicare, right? So, yes, there can be an argument that this is a states' right issue. That's why, you know, we have the Dobbs, the, you know, turning of Dobbs. With that said, though, once again, it feels as if maybe no one thought about the implications of federal funding and how that could maybe supersede some states' rights?
Yeah, that's a good point. I mean, EMTALA is not a prohibitory statute. I mean, it doesn't apply across the board in every circumstance. It only applies if a hospital decides to accept federal funding. And so there is this kind of a counter argument that you are identifying, that this is not a states' rights issue. States are free to do what they want to. They are free to say no. We don't want your money, and therefore our full abortion law can go into effect. But if you states decide to accept federal money through Medicare or any other program, then you have to kind of comply with the strings that are attached. And one of the strings that are attached is providing stabilizing care. And stabilizing care, in some instances, means abortion care for the health of the patient.
Do you think that will be the gist of the argument before the high court on Wednesday? Is this what does stabilizing care mean, and how does abortion play into that?
Yeah, I think that's going to be a big part of the argument. But I think there's another part of what the court is going to be really interested in, especially the conservative judges, that I haven't heard a lot of people talking about, but you do see in the briefs, and that is whether or not the federal government has reached too far. So it's a states' rights argument, but it's not a states' rights argument that's focusing on state power. It's a states' rights argument that's focusing on federal power. Did the federal agency that is responsible for enforcing EMTALA, did they go too far by making this argument that EMTALA means required abortion care? I think that the conservative justices are really going to be interested in that kind of a question. What is the scope of federal agency power in this particular field?
So strictly from a legal standpoint, of course, if you had a crystal ball, it would be easier. Who do you think may prevail in this case?
That's always a dangerous question to try.
To answer,
especially with the U.S. Supreme Court. But if I had to answer the question, I think that Idaho and the Idaho legislature will prevail. I think that the conservative majority on the U.S. Supreme Court will not even get to the merits of this case. I think that they will not determine whether or not there is a conflict between EMTALA and the Idaho abortion statute, but will instead say that the federal agency, which is Department of Health and Human Services, acted outside the scope of its authority by arguing that EMTALA requires abortion services.
So if that stands, then that means that we are back to where we are, I would assume, with Idaho's near total abortion ban, is it is the life of the mother. It has nothing to do with stabilizing a woman who needs stabilizing care in order to potentially save her life.
That's correct.
So what's next in this case? They hear the arguments Wednesday, but they don't make a decision Wednesday.
Yeah, they'll hear the arguments on Wednesday, and I'm really interested to see if the justices will respond to some of the arguments that we see in the briefing about the medical community. And the medical community almost uniformly arguing that if the question is, does this federal statute conflict with the state statute, ask us. Ask us, the medical community, because we can tell you that they do conflict. We can tell you that as a doctor in an emergency room, I cannot both comply with EMTALA and comply with the Idaho statute at the same time. There is a clear conflict. So I'm kind of interested to see whether those questions are brought by some of the more left-leaning justices. But to answer your question, yeah, we won't have a decision until probably June this summer, which oddly is about 2 years exactly from when we got the Dobbs opinion.
Well, I want to thank you so much. We've been talking with McKay Cunningham, Director of On-Campus Experiential Learning at the College of Idaho, who's been giving us a preview of the Idaho abortion case going up before the U.S. Supreme Court on Wednesday. We are going to continue our conversation today about Idaho's abortion law and what's known as EMTALA going before the U.S. Supreme Court this week. So joining us now is Peg Doherty. She is the Deputy General Counsel for St. Luke's Health System. St. Luke's filed an amicus brief in this case. Now, the hospital system believes it has a stake in this case. In 2023, St. Luke's saw more than 235,000 emergency department visits and assisted with 39% of all babies born in our state in 2022. That adds up to more than 8,700 births. Peggy, I want to thank you so much for coming on the show today and talking with us.
I'm happy to be here. Thanks for inviting us.
So I just want to start with the basics, if we can, Peg. Can you explain to us what an amicus brief is?
Sure. An amicus brief is otherwise known as a friend of the court brief, and it is an opportunity for people or entities that are not parties to a lawsuit to file a brief for the court to read and to take into consideration. The goal is to further inform the court of an aspect of the question at issue based on that friend of the court's perspective. So you will see amicus briefs filed on behalf of both parties oftentimes.
So why does St. Luke's want to file this amicus brief in this particular case?
Yeah, well, you know, I think it's primarily because St. Luke's is dedicated to improving the health and well-being of Idahoans and supporting its physicians. And we felt, and we do feel, that this Defense of Life Act undermines those very primary goals of St. Luke's. And that was our motivating factor for filing this brief.
So I have the brief in front of me, and I want to read just some excerpts from it, and maybe we can discuss them. So one of the things in the amicus brief is you acknowledge, you say, St. Luke's understands the Idaho legislature's reasons for enacting this law and appreciates the legislature's obligation to enact laws that reflect the needs and values of Idahoans. Farther down in that paragraph, the amicus brief says, and this is a quote, "Unfortunately, the law's unintended consequences harm patients, medical professionals, the Idaho healthcare system, and Idaho residents more broadly. Because St. Luke's is dedicated to improving the health and well-being of Idahoans and supporting its physicians, and because this undermines those goals, the amicus respectfully files this brief in support of the United States." Can you explain a little bit more about that idea of the unintended consequences of this particular law?
Certainly. Our central concern with this law is that it fails to protect the health of pregnant patients. And it is actually harming many people who have wanted pregnancies. And for many, it was not easy for them to become pregnant. And unfortunately, they suffer complications and end up in fairly distressing situations. And the law only allows our very well-trained physicians and specialists to terminate a pregnancy when it is to prevent the death of the pregnant patient. So for these women who have these desperately wanted pregnancies and they suffer a complication, and unfortunately, the only way to protect their health in the face of the complication is to terminate the pregnancy, Idaho physicians are in a position where the law prohibits them from doing so. And we believe that that was not the intention of the legislature when they passed the Defense of Life Act.
And you go on in this amicus brief to kind of talk more about that. And one of another part of this, and it says, quote, "These delays can cause not only pain and suffering, but also permanent effects such as organ failure, loss of reproductive organs, and other forms of disability." Peg, why was that important to put that in there? Because I think about these women who are in these dire circumstances, right? And as you said, in many cases, these are incredibly wanted pregnancies. And then the idea that this has to be delayed for so long that one of the only ways to then save the life of the mother is to take reproductive organs and therefore never being able to have the children that she has wanted to have.
Right. And, you know, I think it's important to understand that when these complications surface and a woman comes to the emergency room, you know, because of severe pain, because of bleeding, and they are assessed and it is determined that they have a complication that does require termination. Under EMTALA, the law would say that the physician must provide the care to stabilize that patient. And stabilization is defined as providing the medical treatment of the condition so that no material deterioration of the condition is likely to result or occur during the transfer or the discharge. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, Idaho's law says you may only terminate to prevent the death. So what Idaho physicians are faced with is explaining the condition to the pregnant patient, letting her know that they're recommending termination, and with her consent, having to transfer her out of state for that procedure. The time that it takes to accomplish that transfer is a delay in care. When we have physicians in our hospitals who are trained experts and know what needs to be done, we still are being forced to transfer these patients out of state to a hospital they're not familiar with, to providers they don't know, their support system is not with them. And so it's really cruel. That is really what this law is.
During a news conference call yesterday morning, your St. Luke's chief medical officer, Dr. Jim Sousa, said that for all of last year, right, when this law was not in place, one patient was airlifted to another state for maternal complications. Since January, when SCOTUS lifted the EMTALA protection from the abortion ban, it has happened 6 times. So if we look at the pace of that, Peg, that means that could be upwards of 20 patients just this year who would need to be airlifted to other states for termination because of these complications, right?
That is correct, yeah.
So, and as you mentioned, that can be argued as a delay of care. Why is it important that the listening public understands how this is impacting patients and the number of patients compared to, you know, what it was like before this law was in place?
Well, I think there is, of course, the pain and suffering for the patient while they are waiting to be transferred. And like I said, going to this facility that they're not familiar with doctors they're not familiar with, et cetera. That pain and suffering, is incalculable. Then there's the actual cost that it that both the hospital and the patients will bear for the transfer to another state. And these transfers that we're talking about that have happened since the EMTALA protections were no longer in place, these are air transports. So the cost is significant. And we are still, because they have happened since January, we are still analyzing what those costs are, both to the individual and to the hospital system. But there are real tangible costs that will be associated with these.
And part of your argument is that this Idaho code imposes conflicting state and federal obligations on Idaho's healthcare providers. I want to read part of your argument, and this is Idaho Code 18-622 imposes conflicting state and federal obligations on Idaho's healthcare providers. Quote, from the perspective of Idaho's physicians and hospital systems, Idaho Code 18-622 and EMTALA conflict. To start, consider the stakes. Idaho's medical providers depend on Medicare to care for their patients. In 2023 alone, Medicare covered services accounted for more than 40% of St. Luke's patient encounters. If Idaho's hospitals were to lose their ability to participate in Medicare, many patients who rely on them, not only those covered by Medicare, would not be able to receive the care they need, nor are they likely to easily find care elsewhere. Idaho suffers from a hospital resource crisis in which we are often not enough hospital staff or beds, and facilities are forced to transfer patients to other facilities for care. Participation in Medicare is essential to healthcare operations and Idahoans. Paige, can you talk a little bit more about this? I mean, you definitely go into more detail in the amicus brief, but this conflict between state law and federal law, because is there a concern that if this moves forward, that you will lose Medicare funding? And I would assume it wouldn't just be your healthcare system in the state of Idaho that would be impacted by that.
Under the current circumstances, we are putting physicians in a position where they either comply with EMTALA and stabilize the patient, which may mean terminating a pregnancy in order to protect the health of that patient, or, and if they do so, that would be in violation of Idaho's Defense of Life Act. The alternative is also true. If they are complying with the Defense of Life Act, there's this delay in care and they would not have stabilized to their capability in as they are supposed to under EMTALA. And so CMS could come in and say, you know, this, it doesn't appear that you stabilize this patient, therefore you're violating EMTALA. That could result in fines to the hospital. It could result in fines to the physician. And ultimately, it could result in the disenrollment of our Medicare privileges. And therefore, the impact to the whole health system would be huge, because those 40% of our patients are Medicare patients. So if we were no longer able to accept Medicare patients, the ripple effect would be to all Idahoans. And that would slowly deteriorate healthcare in Idaho.
You go on in the brief, as you mentioned, about the need to stabilize a patient's health under EMTALA. And you just mentioned you are required to do this. Then you go on in the brief to say the legislature created an exception for terminations that are necessary to prevent the death of the pregnant woman. However, there is still no exception to preserve the mother's underlying health, right? And that is her bodily organs. That's her fertility. That's other irreparable harms that women may experience. And again, as you've said, and as you state in the brief, EMTALA requires stabilizing treatment for any emergency medical condition, not just those treatments intended to prevent death, as you say in your brief. Can you expand on that a bit more, Peg? Because I think that there are times where, you know, our legislators doing what they believe to be best was, but we are saying save the life of the mother. Yet it is not so black and white, and pregnancy never is.
Right, right. Yeah, that is a wonderful, your last point is very well taken. Pregnancy in and of itself is a high risk health condition. And let me break up my answer a little bit about what stabilization means. And under EMTALA, what we are required to do. EMTALA defines emergency medical condition for us. That is like the first step under EMTALA is, does this patient have an emergency medical condition? And to analyze that, EMTALA asks the physician to determine whether or not the person needs immediate medical attention. And without that, the person's health could be in serious jeopardy, or it could result in serious impairment to their bodily functions or serious dysfunction of any bodily organ. And then the physician, if they determine there is an emergency medical condition, is required to stabilize that condition. Well, a patient who is pregnant and has an emergency medical condition, the doctors are going to look at her and say, okay, if we do not address this emergency medical condition and it may require termination, we are not going to be able to save potential bodily functions. We are not going to be able to save her reproductive organs. So those are health matters. That would be to preserve the patient's health if our doctors were able to do that. But instead, the law says, no, you can only terminate to prevent the death of that pregnant patient. And what doctors are, and I've heard this many, many times in my conversations with our obstetricians and our maternal fetal medicine specialists, is that, you know, it's not a crystal clear, bright line that now I'm acting to prevent this patient's death. Up until now, I would have only been acting to protect her health. And so we're putting doctors in this position of, one, fear that they may be prosecuted criminally and have their medical license revoked, but two, that they are actually witnessing a patient's deterioration before they act, because they're trying to decide, at what point am I really acting to prevent her death? So rather than watch a patient deteriorate, they are making decisions to transfer patients to a state that will allow this patient to be treated and hopefully preserve her health and save her bodily functions and her organs. So it's just not a bright line that now I'm acting to prevent her death before I was only acting to preserve her health. Mm-hmm. That is the struggle that physicians are facing in all of these pregnancy complications.
Peg, in your legal opinion, is it fair to say that this Idaho law really puts Idaho healthcare providers in what I would say is an impossible situation? Because, as you just mentioned, they cannot terminate a pregnancy unless the mother's life is in jeopardy. And at the same time, if they know that her health is in jeopardy, they are in jeopardy of being prosecuted, of losing their license, of going to jail. And with mm-hmm. that said, I know the argument against that is, and we have heard this from legislators, is we would not do that. We would not bring charges against a physician who is, you know, doing this. I would argue, then why is it stated in the law that this is a possibility?
Yes, I would agree with you. And let me just give you a couple examples. I'm lucky enough to work for a health system that provides robust legal support to our staff. And that includes 24/7, 365 attorney on call services. And I have received a number of calls as the attorney on call from physicians to talk through a pregnancy complication where the recommended treatment is termination. And they're trying to decide, can I go forward with that termination or do I need to transfer this patient? And I will tell you, in those conversations, when I pose the question to them, if you were to terminate, would you be preventing your patient's death? That is probably the most frustrating question that they have to answer in those phone calls, because it's not like, yes, I'm going to hang up the phone because I have to go prevent her death moment. It is, well, if her fever spikes, then that could indicate sepsis. So then there might be, that could be a situation where we would have to act because the infection could kill her. And so we would be preventing her death. But there's time before that. So they're not easy situations that the doctors can rely on the law to help make their decisions. And of course, in the back of their mind, even though there may be a legislator who says, oh, we would never, the fact is they know, these doctors know what the law is. And just because a legislator at some point in time during the session said we would never prosecute, they don't know that their local prosecutor is not going to make a decision that, yeah, you crossed a line and you weren't preventing this patient's death, so we are going to charge you. And we also should not forget that under the Fetal Heartbeat Act, that is also an Idaho law, there is a provision for a private right of action, a civil action to be brought against a physician by the person whose pregnancy was terminated, by the father, the grandparent, the sibling, the aunt, or the uncle of the fetus. They can bring a private right of action against that physician. And the law says the minimum award for that is a $20,000 damages award. It can be pursued even if there is no criminal action filed. And it is still structured with an affirmative defense, which means that the provider is then put in a position to prove that, in fact, they were in compliance with the law. But in the meantime, they've had to defend themselves civilly. Mm-hmm. So there is time, there's reputation, and there is money that all comes into play for those civil actions. So yes, the criminal action potential creates fear. But these physicians are also well aware of this other law that does allow these civil actions to be filed. So combined, those things just, again, heighten that fear, which causes delay. And it is extremely unsettling for physicians because they are well-trained. They know what needs to be done. But all of these other things are having to be factored in their decision making, and all of that is creating delay in care for the patients. And one last thing. These pressures have resulted in a departure of physicians from the practice of obstetrics, and St. Luke's itself has lost two of our fantastic maternal fetal medicine specialists who left because of this law. And they, I don't want to put words in their mouths, but they left because they felt that they could not practice as they were trained to practice. So the detrimental effects are not only to the patient at issue, but really to all of Idahoans, because we do start to see, and we have started to see, this increase in the number of physicians who are leaving the practice of obstetrics and have left the state.
Peg, before I let you go, if this law is upheld by the U.S. Supreme Court, what is your biggest concern, and not just in terms of what this means for your organization, but the broader implication for Idahoans?
Well, I guess personally, I am concerned and fear for all of those women who are of reproductive age, because I fear that we will continue to lose physicians, and that will affect prenatal care, and then the domino effect of not getting good prenatal care could create more complications in pregnancies. So that is a huge concern. I think Dr. Souza also pointed out in yesterday's press call that the domino effect is really beyond just those of reproductive age, that those physicians who leave obstetrical care and may still practice gynecological care, but we will even see some of those doctors leave. And so for women who are not of reproductive age and are still experiencing gynecological needs, that if the physicians aren't there to treat things like cancers or to detect things like cancer, then we could see an uptick in other health conditions that really should have been addressed but weren't, because we didn't have the appropriate professionals available for patients. So those are big concerns. I think if the law, if we do not prevail in this case, and if we are not able to obtain those EMTALA protections that were in place prior to January of this year, I think we all are just going to have to work harder to try and get a health exception into Idaho's law in the next legislative session.
Well, Peg, I really appreciate you taking time. I know how busy you are to talk to us about this. Really appreciate the conversation. We've been talking with Peg Doherty. She is the Deputy General Counsel for St. Luke's Health System. St. Luke's filed an amicus brief in a case involving Idaho's abortion law that will go before the U.S. Supreme Court on Wednesday. Again, Peg, thank you so much for your time.
Well, thank you. I appreciate your interest and the time you're taking on this issue.
Thanks so much for listening to Idaho Matters. Boise State Public Radio and Idaho Matters are members of the NPR Network. It's an independent coalition of public media podcasters. You can find more shows in the network wherever you get your podcasts. I'm Gemma Gaudette. We'll see you tomorrow.
At a time when information continues to come at us faster and faster, sometimes you need to hit pause and rewind. NPR's Throughline takes you back in time to the source of the news stories filling your feed. Find NPR's Throughline wherever you get your podcasts.